Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The deadline to take out papers for the Boston mayoral election expired this week, and the makeup of the field is historic. All six major candidates identify as people of color. That is a wealth of diversity, and it also brings painful questions about legacies of discrimination, identity, and belonging to the public forum. Yesterday, counselor and mayoral candidate Anissa Asaibi-George put out a forceful statement on her identity as the daughter of Arab and Polish immigrants after questions about her identity arose in an online podcast and a subsequent article in the Boston Globe. Counselor Asaibi-George joins us now. Counselor, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much, Tiziana. I'm happy to be here with you.
So let me begin by asking you, why did you put out the statement yesterday?
Well, I think when you read the article in question, it's pretty clear that the narrative takes a turn when talking about me. Everyone else gets this nice paragraph about their background and the impact it has had on their life. And then there's my paragraph. And I think the article left out some critical context. They didn't give me an opportunity to respond or to talk about my identity and my family. And that was certainly very, very frustrating.
Why was that so frustrating to you?
Well, you know, when you are the Boston Globe and you help set the narrative, and by talking about how some may question me and my identity, you're validating a viewpoint that I think is certainly untrue and hurtful. The conversation they quote was actually a very great one. When we think about the politics and Prosecco, it was a wonderful conversation and one that I'm actually very much accustomed to having. I talk a lot about my background, about my identity, about my family, about my heritage, about my roots. And in that politics and Prosecco conversation, the host was very considerate in allowing me to answer and actually having a conversation about my background, because it's one that is certainly interesting and unusual. And that conversation was very different than the conversation I had with the writer of the Globe article. And, you know, we had a conversation last night with the Globe team, and I think that we're all on the same page, but it's just very frustrating. I am who I am. I'm very proud about my heritage. I'm very proud about my roots. I'm very proud about my family, where I come from. And I'm always very happy to talk about it as a first generation American, as someone who is Arab and Polish, and someone who identifies as a woman of color. I've been always very open and happy to talk about my story because it shares my experiences. It shares maybe a slightly different ethnicity, a different heritage than others maybe have experienced. And unfortunately, many Arab people live in this in-between space where our unique experiences and that discrimination that comes with it sometimes, you know, allows us to count for having that experience, and sometimes it doesn't.
All right, so let's dig into that a little bit. You made several references there to the podcast that Jaquetta Van Zandt does online, Politics and Prosecco. You did it back in February. In this conversation, I watched it. In this conversation, she raises this question of identity because she raises concerns about people who only claim to be of color sometimes. And you talk there about this challenge of feeling like you have access to more rooms than other people of color, but also because of your heritage, you don't have a seat at the table. I just want to ask you to spell that out a little bit more.
Well, I'll tell you very plainly, sometimes Arabs count sort of in the public space as people of color, and sometimes Arabs don't. And, you know, that's been something that I've certainly struggled with my entire life. It's certainly something my father struggled with here as a new immigrant to the United States in his younger years. And, you know, I think it's also important to note, and I talked about this with Jaquetta that evening in that podcast, that I don't ever conflate my experience with others. Sharing my story does not mean that I equate my life with or discount the struggles of other races and ethnicities.
And so let's stay on that for a second.
Yeah, yeah, no, let's, but I also want to say that because of my experience or through my experience, I'm also hearing oftentimes of other people picking the identity that they choose for me. And that can present sometimes challenges.
So let's stay with that. I think one of the reasons that race is so essential to this election is that we're fundamentally grappling with our city's history of structural racism. One's racial identity can be a signal to voters about how deeply you've lived through and suffered from some of that structural racism. You do acknowledge not having a seat at the table, but also having more freedom of movement, being welcomed in more rooms. So how do you address the question of whether your lived experience gives you the perspective necessary to take on some pretty serious core issues of racial justice and systemic oppression if you were to be mayor?
Well, this, you know, discussion certainly exists and has existed for generations. It's one that I've lived through as my experiences as a young daughter of an Arab and an Arab Muslim. It is an experience I've lived through as the daughter of immigrants. It is the life I've lived growing up here in this city. And certainly my life does not equate or cannot relate to the lived experience of a Black person. That is for sure. But it does not mean that as the daughter of immigrants, as the daughter of an Arab in particular, because that tends to be the topic that we're discussing when we're talking about my identity and how I present, does not mean that I cannot lead our city through some really important conversations and some restructuring of our city to account for the structural racism that has existed in our city. When we think about the challenges in our school system, when we think about the systemic racism that exists in our transportation system, in our public health system, in our general healthcare system, in our policing system, when we think about all of these systems in which the mayor of this great city needs to lead on, not being of a particular race, and we can pick any which one, is as these conversations sort of go down these different rabbit holes. To have any one of these races does not disqualify me from being able to engage in these conversations and doing the hard work that is required of the mayor of this great city. And I look forward to leading the city through that time.
All right. In our limited time, let's talk about a couple of policy things. Earlier today, you were endorsed by former Boston Police Commissioner William Gross, who was the city's first Black police commissioner. Why is this endorsement important to you?
Well, I'm very grateful to have his endorsement. His confidence in my ability speaks volumes, I think, in our ability to be engaged in community, to build trust between law enforcement and the residents, to promote diversity and inclusion, especially in the police department. When we think about our city's efforts around public safety, when we think about the city's necessary efforts to rebuild trust between our police department and our community, I believe that Boston can be both safe and just, that these are not mutually exclusive ideas and concepts and efforts. We certainly need reforms and we need safety. And I believe that Boston can have both. And I believe that Commissioner Gross's endorsement of me today indicates his belief that I can make sure that in Boston that we do that, that we can achieve these things. And I am flattered that he believes in my ability, both my track record and my work going forward, to bring people together to have those tough conversations about creating true community policing here in the city of Boston. We boast of great successes, rightfully so, but we recognize the necessary work that's left undone when we think about the role of community policing across our city and every one of our neighborhoods.
You spoke a moment ago about the fact that we certainly need reforms. One of the places that you differentiate from other major candidates in the race is on the question of defunding the police. You don't support that. You support increasing funding for social services. So where do you see a need for the police to reform themselves, and how do you see that being done?
Well, it's across certainly all different aspects. We need to make sure that there is accountability and transparency in the work of the police department. And we need that if we truly do want to lead on community policing. And as mayor, I will push for critical reforms, including expanding implicit bias training, making sure that we have mental health clinicians to respond to the needs of our residents. That's work I've done on the city council, making sure that we are reforming the gang database and making sure that we are stepping up community outreach. Again, we need to make sure that our police officers are directly involved in our neighborhoods, building those relationships, and that our police department is reflective of our neighborhoods. We need to make sure that we have diversity in our ranks, and I will fight to increase diversity across the Boston Police Department, whether it's recruiting new officers directly into the force, continuing to build our cadet program, and making sure that we are promoting diverse candidates into leadership roles. We need to make sure that we are including real racial and gender diversity across all levels, especially in leadership roles over at BPD.
I think we've got time for one more question. A group of Roxbury and South End residents marched from the area around Massachusetts Avenue and Melnia Cass Boulevard to the State House yesterday, protesting what they say are inhumane conditions in the neighborhood. We've engaged with you a lot on this issue before. As mayor, what would you do to address the residents' concerns and provide for the people struggling with addiction in our city?
Well, you know, as the former chair of a committee that no longer exists on the Boston City Council, I did a great deal of work around homelessness, mental health, and substance use disorder. It's a priority. It has to be a priority. And when we think about this last year, we've lost sight in many ways of the work that we need to do to help our most vulnerable residents who are in a moment of crisis. We need to do this both in the city of Boston and work for a regional response, because we do have to decentralize all of the services that are really sort of saturating the area of Mass and Cass. So providing those good services, but making sure that we are meeting individuals where they are when they are in their time of need, making sure that programs are available, and making sure, and what I have suggested through this budget process, as we look to receive the recovery funds from the federal government, that we are investing them in responding to the needs of those dealing with, again, homelessness, opioid addiction, and mental health issues. We have a unique opportunity to get individuals the help they need with those funds, and do it quickly and do it with urgency.
Boston City Councilor and mayoral candidate Anissa Asaibi-George, thanks for joining us, Councilor.
Thank you very much, Tiziana.
Now, listening into that conversation was WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, welcome back.
Hey, good to be here, Tiziana.
Let me just start by inviting you to react to the discussion you just heard.
Well, the first part of the discussion I thought was interesting, and it's worth saying, you know, when it comes to these questions of race, it's complicated. I mean, let's begin with that. It's really complicated. So we have this incredibly diverse field of candidates running for mayor of Boston, and there are people in the city who want the next mayor to be a Black or a brown person, but it's not completely clear what that means, but to some it's important to at least make a distinction between people who are descendants of formerly enslaved people who have experience dealing with the kinds of institutional racism that we've been spending a lot of time talking about, and people who are not. Now, Anissa Asaibi-George clearly represents diversity, but she doesn't necessarily represent that kind of diversity and that kind of history. And adding to that complexity, and I think she talked about this, in her case, it's not really clear how this country even categorizes her. You know, she was asked today how she filled out the census form regarding her race, and she said she left it blank because there is no place on the U.S. Census for a descendant of a person of Middle Eastern origin or North African origin to check. And Tiziana, one more thing. I would say this. I think it's really important to keep this in mind. There are six major candidates running for mayor. None of them is a white male. So whoever wins, it's going to break the mold and represent a historic change in this city, whether it's Kim Janey, Andrea Campbell, Michelle Wu, John Barros, John Santiago, or Anissa Asaibi-George. So a lot to digest there.
And to what extent are the candidates' personal identities, their lived experience, core to this campaign, Anthony?
Well, I mean, I think you heard Anissa Asaibi-George expressing that pretty well. There are others who are doing it. I mean, for example, Acting Mayor Kim Janey is running as a daughter of Roxbury, who understands firsthand the issues around inequality in this city. Another example, Andrea Campbell talks a lot about her twin brother and the radically different path that his life took from hers. She went on to law school, She's a city councilor. He was accused of terrible crimes, was stuck in the criminal justice system, and died in custody. So two very different paths that Campbell says speak to the need of big reforms around corrections and policing. One more example, Michelle Wu talks about being the daughter of Taiwanese immigrants who had to become a caregiver to her younger siblings when her mother was diagnosed with schizophrenia. So all three of them put these formative experiences front and center in their campaigns. And the other candidates are doing it in their own ways as well.
So you heard us talk about the endorsement today from the former head of the Boston Police Department, William Gross. You were at that event earlier today where she announced that. How important is this kind of an endorsement by a former major law enforcement figure in Boston?
Well, I mean, it's interesting for a couple of reasons. I mean, obviously, it's important to have a former police commissioner say to you, you know, we take you seriously. And one of the things Gross says was, I see Asaibi George in the neighborhood all the time. She doesn't just take pot shots at the police department. She's really interested in working with us. That's what he said. It's also interesting because Gross is an interesting figure in his own right. He was Marty Walsh's police commissioner. And one of the things Asaibi George has been doing is representing a kind of continuity with former Mayor Walsh. She aligns herself with Mayor Walsh and his policies and talks about the things that she was able to accomplish on the city council in partnership with Mayor Walsh. So she's trying to establish herself as that sort of continuity figure, if you will.
I wonder if there will be competition there with candidate John Barros, who served in the Walsh administration as well.
I think that's a great point that Barros can make. I mean, you can talk, you know, what does continuity mean? I mean, look at someone like John Santiago, who we haven't talked about lately. I mean, he's got an extraordinary resume as an emergency room doctor, as an Army Reserve captain, as, you know, a state representative. I mean, that represents a certain kind of continuity as well. But obviously, you know, going back to this historic notion that this is the most diverse group of candidates ever. And for the first time in 200 years, the city is not going to be led by a white male. It's a pretty extraordinary moment, no matter how you look at it and no matter who ends up winning this race.
You've been reporting on fundraising. Where are we on that, and how does Councillor Asaibi George compare with other candidates?
Well, she's doing pretty well. I mean, the leaders, the people with the most cash on hand, City Councillor Andrea Wu, City Councillor Andrea Wu and Andrea Campbell.
No, Andrea Campbell?
Yes, Andrea Campbell and Michelle Wu, forgive me. Have the most cash on hand. Now, Anissa Asaibi George has done very well since the beginning of the year. She's raised a lot of money. Only Michelle Wu has raised more money than her. John Santiago has the same amount of cash on hand, so he's doing quite well as well. And Kim Janey has the least amount of cash on hand, but she did very well in the last month, raising over $200,000. So keep in mind that money is only one indicator of the race, but that's a quick snapshot of where the leaders in the money race stand.
Well, we are going to continue to watch it with you. There's several months left to go. WBUR senior political reporter Anthony Brooks. Anthony, thanks for the time.
Hey, my pleasure.